So this is Brothers Wiz number 18. I think last one was 18. I think this was 19. Okay. But then I think we missed 17. It doesn't matter. Now they're here over there. We're at the
it's just the mom edition.
2014. Yeah, that's the year. And we're in Pittsburgh, which I found out is in Pennsylvania recently. This is just the conclusion. Tom is still sober. Completely.
Unbelievably.
I'm Tom Smith. And oh God, did you go off at this one? We had bitches, we had asses, and he made it into three other people's presentations. I did, fairly certain. Got Mike Hammett all the way from Chicago. JJ Boyd made it all the way from North Carolina, indeed North Carolina. And then you got Justin Wilson, who apparently is still alive, despite all indications of the opposite. And then we have Thomas, who came all the way from Slovakia just to be in this video. He didn't even come to the club. Just showed up in this
video. You're hopping on the plane afterwards.
And then we've got a bunch of new...
Still Murphy, right?
That's a delay. We can go pretend like you did. Now, we've got a lot of new friends in the room. We've got Wayne back here. We've got... Say your name.
Gabe,
that's right. And then we've got Brian, who wears a hoodie and doesn't salsa dance. And then the guy next to him, I can't remember what his name was.
Drew Beveridge.
That's right.
Beveridge.
Yeah. All right, so I guess it's probably the easiest thing to do is talk about the new hardware that they announced and then give our first impressions, right?
Yeah.
All right, CRSs, they announced a bunch of those.
Oh, the fiber one, I was super excited to see the new fiber.
12-port?
12-port, I think. Did you see?
12-port.
It's a 12-port SFP with, I think they managed to stick a SFP Plus on it too.
Yeah, it's like, and then you got an Ethernet port for management, whatever. Which is great for what, like MDU, aggregating all that stuff in, or I guess your high density data center environment, whatever. Bring that to a 10 gig CCR. And then they talked about the CCR 1072 again. That's not new.
Which is nice. Well, they actually, this time it was moved over, the European one, because we were just talking about it the last couple of when I think it was you, we were talking at the European one, and I said, oh, they were done power supplies, and you said, were they a hot swap club? And I went, no. But I reckon they're bitching now because they go, we put in two power supplies. So now they actually, they saw the Brothers Wiz thing and they said, you want to change the
voice, right? On the spot.
So, yeah.
Stop the presses.
It's pretty cool. Like, and they're actually better than most other power supplies because they were actually removing the power supply with utility power attached, which I thought was ballsy. Everyone else kind of puts a pink feature on to say, unplug the cable first. And this nice little big arc.
I think Giannis said this is like their best working demo unit too. It's kind of chancy. Yeah, they went for it.
But I'm really excited to see the 1072, and I have several deployments immediately to put that in.
Seeing it in person just made me even more excited about getting my hands on the product. I think still no indication of price, right? Or what's it look like?
No, I seen a price. It was funny. The only price I could find on the internet was on Rognock's website. And I actually cornered Tom. I was like, where'd you get your price? He's like, oh, I basically make it up. I'm usually close.
I made up a price for the map, and then they read my site and then made it that price.
MSRP has on his site, which is completely just apparently made up, is 1800 with a selling price of somewhere in the neighborhood of about 12, I think. But again, he made it up.
Yeah, I was thinking that it might be like if we extrapolate, you know, if you take a CR, Calcore router 1036, and if you find out the wholesale price of a 36 core Telera, compare with the 72 core Telera. The ECC RAM on it, the 16 gigs, I think that's pretty cool. So at least, you know, and they even acknowledge it and said that burning from, because obviously people are putting them in higher pressure locations, depending on, they need, you know, more resiliency in the RAM, more robust RAM. So I reckon that could push up the price a bit too. Like, you know, ECC generally is about 10 times the price.
These days you can get DDR3, ECC RAM, buff and everything. You can get about 200 euros for 16 gigabytes.
Okay.
There's a
two to three times probably what the standard would be.
I said, well, I mean, what's the highest price CC ought to have now? Like $1,100, mm-hmm. right? So you got to figure what other three, four on top of that at least.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, you know, Tom, I think his MSRP is really in the ballpark around 18, and probably street cross for like 12 or 14. $100 US.
I expect maybe a little more.
Yeah, well, you know, at the moment in New Orleans, when we were drooling over the 1016 CCRs, we were all, oh, yeah, these things are going to be like $4,000. And then they release them, and they were like, oh, so
crazy. Well, what else new? The radome covers?
The radome covers for the MANTs. Or how good is it?
Actually, my question is about the CRS. Can you imagine putting that in a data center? I mean, with the current features, everything else.
Yeah, it feels like a enterprise sort of thing, like a small office.
CRS, yeah, but yeah. That's what I mean. With the current feature set, putting in a data center is just for me. You know, you don't even have spanning tree yet. You don't have LLDB, which is like an absolute necessity.
Right, right. I see, like, we do a lot of apartment complexes, like bandwidth out there, and then we aggregate all those into like a 35/512G. This is like a cheaper option than just all that fiber aggregation. What else did they talk about? They have a media converter they announced.
Yeah, the FTC media converter. It's $39. Should be shipping this month, they said. Yeah,
I don't quite get the point of it. Like, I know that they're converting, but right. It's not like an active product.
Well, it's not an active product, but I think the idea is it's an outdoor media converter. Yeah. So it's like there's really nothing in the market space that I'm aware of that fits that bill.
And it's not weather sealed, so I think it's meant to be mounted and kind of closed in the water hose. But I don't see why you couldn't just silicone it shut or something like that.
Yeah, I'm curious to see how people use it right off in my deployments. I can't find a reason to run out and buy a case.
But when I'm buying TP-Link media converters, it's about $40. So it's just right in the same price range.
But it's outdoor.
Yeah, but it's outdoor. It's hard.
You know, fiber to band deployments would be
the first thing. I wonder whether they have like a CPE-type version, you know, one that's like a map. One that you can actually monitor the actual fiber into the density of TDM, losses and stuff like that.
Well, they have any, what's the switch with the SFP?
260?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the 260GS.
Yeah, so that's, that could be, indoor, but the outdoor thing is...
Does the 260GS have all that TDM monitoring stuff? I don't know if you use the 260s.
Oh, like you can see, like, the...
I have a couple of them, but I don't use them for cover.
I've used SFP on one. I never bothered to look at light levels. It was such a short run.
Actually, the temperature range is amazing. It's -42.7.
I know I have mine like in a steel can, like a big J box. So
in the presentation, they were saying, they mentioned about fiber to the tower, which I posted on Facebook, and then. Gino from Puerto Rico said that what he wanted to see in that would be a DC jack or PV pass through, because you fiber up the tower, but then you still need something else to.
Are you talking about the media converter?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, some other way of taking the PV through that to the device.
Well, one thing we were talking about looking at was the net metals. They don't have a barrel jack, so they've got they got the SFP slot, but you still have to power through the PO.
Yeah, it was incredible this year. Everyone at MarketTech was incredibly open to perhaps outside ideas, product improvements that, humility and...
I was blown away by the transparency.
Yeah.
These kind of, which is just, they finally opened the doors a little bit, at least for the roadmap, talking about, because they did a whole presentation from Giannis about the CCR almost a template gap sort of
thing. Yes.
So the problems they've encountered, how they've mitigated and then problems they're seeing, well, I don't know problems, but potential improvements that they're going to make, and this is what we're going to do.
And a lot of,
so that was
great. And a lot of, you know, not really you should be using it this way, but you know, in order for, this is how we designed it, so we're now telling you, this is how we designed it, instead of just, you figured out, here's the, just like the, he is talking about the simple cubes. On, you don't do one simple cube, you have to have, what is it, 36?
Yeah, depending on the number of
words. Yeah, finally explain why you have to do that for the hash.
I mean, if you're really active in the community, you know, you can get that information.
It's always in like bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah, so things like that, they really opened it up.
Yeah, and something, another thing they said was like how the Q-tree right now, they recommend using not just the global, but trying to chop it up into the individual interface queues and stuff. Yeah. But then they were saying all these optimizations they're making on simple queues, they're going to then roll into the Q-tree. So I guess temporary fix is do this. I'm just going
to. It's a workaround,
Yeah.
But even like I love the firewall thing, because I was asking for a while, just like, can you give an idea of how intense a particular firewall really was? Now, seven, like what, or layer seven rules, Yanis was going on about, you know, how they're the sum of all evil, and I would agree, they are absolutely, like, it's the quickest way to crash in any type of router.
Router.
For people outside the US, router. try to teach them how to pronounce stuff. It's not going so well. Don't worry about it.
Bandwidth.
Bandwidth. Bandwidth. Bandwidth. Sorry, Giannis.
That's like a musical sandwich.
But the slide I really loved was the order in which they're processing, like the
firewall rules, right?
It was awesome. Like, you know, and I think number 43 was layer 7. You know, which I mean that's you know, it's really positive.
More to the point, what Tom's talking about is they said, you know, when a firewall rule, so when it hits the first firewall, how is it actually processed? And I'm not sure how they were doing it before. But they said, you know, it starts with, you know, like source address, and then it'll go to destination, port, or whatever. And it actually gave you the flow, so.
I mean, you can look at the chart and kind of figure it out,
I think they just must have reordered everything, because they said they made so many optimizations, they're getting so much more throughput, so.
Yeah.
It makes me curious, like, what the order was before, but I mean, it's awesome.
I love the way that it was addressed, basically, stop asking why. You know, when you start putting firewall rules in, while the bandwidth goes down.
Yeah.
That was addressed very subtly, but effectively.
Yes. But I think it's good. You put that information out there, you can make it available, and then you can say things like that, you know, once it is public.
And it was an interesting one. Like, they were quite level-headed in their response about, you know, remember the Israeli chip manufacturer bought Telera? And I think it's Easy something, sorry, I forget the name of the company, but basically, like, we were asking that, you know, it was asked in the presentation and then asked separately. And they went, it's not a problem right now, we're keeping an eye on it. That's it. He goes, no panic, we're not panicking, it's all good. So it's, you know, they were quite frightened.
It would be interesting if that would be a piece of intellectual property that they could acquire, because they're probably one of the largest users of the Tile CPU architecture.
You ever want anybody else that uses Tile?
I know there's a firewall kind of application blocking system. I can't remember. It's a US-based company that is using it.
In the sale announcement of Tile to their company, I saw, you know, like, they mentioned the companies buying their chips and using them.
It's not like a list, but they said,
these guys are using them, Microtech's using them, these guys are using them, and then.
Something else kind of around the Tyler thing is, you know, they're dumping so much, obviously R&D, so much time and effort into bringing up the Tyler stuff. It makes me wonder, are they going to start like rolling out like a one core Tyler and putting in like the lowest, you know, so like the new.
I was thinking like that.
Like the new 850, did they just announce that as the power PC, right?
Yeah.
It's this dual core. Maybe they'll put out a version that's two-core Tylera and just replace that.
It's not just Tylera. They said they went to Linux kernel developers. They actually went to Tylera developers.
That's crazy.
It's crazy.
That was that they have that much influence over those guys at Elk is pretty awesome.
Well, I'd say that, like, in fairness, the price, like, I don't think there's any other products out there with the layers, with, like, or with that many cores that are that price. I mean, often I'd ask, the, you know, like, I think it was just you who said sell a quarter of them, but, you know, if you make four times the amount of them, or some guy who said, why do you sell it for four times the price and sell a quarter of them? Right. Still make, you're still doing well at that. Now, I'm not saying that we've jacked up the price on everything, but,
yeah.
but if it means that you can actually, you know, increase your R&D, increase your support, increase, then it makes, you know, that kind of way.
I'm in for them, though, because whether they sell a few at a high price or quantity at a low price, they don't actually do the manufacturing. That's all outsourced.
So it's largely a world product, so if you manipulate the crops too much to the north, it's going to take it off the table for emerging markets.
Also, counterfeiters would probably be more enticed to start trying.
Yeah, I think if you manipulate, if your margins are too high, you're absolutely going to take it off the table for, you know, for a lot of the world that is actually embracing the technology even more so than us here in the United States.
I checked their website, and they have 72, 36, 16, and 9-core versions.
So 9-core is one.
I reckon there'll be a 9-core version on the 800. Like, I think that will be, because if you ever notice that there's always a wireless package with the Teleras, you know, and even if you look at the old packages, there's always a 9-core. There's always the, so I reckon. No one has said this, by the way, but I might bet, if I was a betting man, right now John Tully's actively closing down lines so that I lose the bet. But basically, I reckon there's going to be a Shiku, like the bazooka of wireless, and probably the base on them, of course, there. That's my bet. You heard it first.
If they have the influence now, you know, working on the kernel development and things like that, you know, maybe go to them and say, hey, I want a 4-core.
Right, yeah, I mean,
make me one.
Like you say, I commit to buying 1 million units of this 4-core processor, and then, I mean, maybe they're done with the MIPS platform, you know? If you could not have to develop for all those other versions anymore, you just quit doing that, you just focus on the Tyler architecture. Man, I bet it would, like,
and
scouring stuff
like that. And x86.
That was a segue in that. I'm curious about massively multi-core x86 machines. You would think that since most of the development is done in x86, you know, compiling one architecture to the next, once you have it working on your core platform, say Tyler, going to x86 because you're doing all the coding on x86 to start with, or one would assume that you just have your compiler to tool chain set up for x86 and
sort it out. What's the big complaint about x86? Why is no 64-bit and then driver support?
Driver support.
Yes, that's really the.
So my question is, they don't support virtualization at all officially in any platform.
Yeah, like if they have the power virtualized ones for VMware.
Yeah, if they have VMware and even Hyper-V, it's like, I think that would be a really good step for them. They have some multiple that they don't want to do.
Well, I think their licensing system, unfortunately, doesn't protect them from, you know, deploying millions of instances. You can download a virtual image, and that's one of the things that, you know, like, it's kind of like when I had that conversation, you know, with Arnas or Lads, you know, I said that, you know, why, you know, do a bit more in virtualization, like, for instance, having an Amazon instance, like a lot of the other firewall vendors have instances, you know, ready to go, turnkey, and you pay a license fee to the vendor and obviously to Amazon. And you can go to go make money on software. You know, easy fix.
Yeah, easy fix. Well, and I think they're changing the licensing model is a way for them to get away from that. You know, hey, we now, it's supported on router boards, it's supported on our boards from now on. And, well, I can't remember the wording, but I think it's any current router board you can upgrade. So then that allows them to end of life products, and hey, you have to buy router board. Like you say, we make router boards, not software.
Yeah, It's just because like a lot of the other vendors are embracing virtualization, and I use it all the time. Yeah. What they do is the trick is for VMware users is set it up as an x86-64, and then it'll actually set up virtualized. It'll present it instead of an AMD 32 PCNet. It'll actually emulate an Intel Pro 1000 chip. So at least, but it's more CPU intensive on the actual host itself, but at least you can get interfaces over a gig on,
Is that like the E1000?
E1000, yeah.
I think the problem with that is that you are limited to router unless it doesn't have a driver. It only recognizes L3 MPU, so L2 MPU is also always helpful that you can drive.
It's in a jumbo frame.
That's very limited, for example, for us as well. It's
one of the ideas. So Brian was just saying, to kind of tie back into the virtualization thing, is that Hyper-V, you have these types of problems. When you pass version 4, it doesn't work anymore. That's something that I look at kind of bringing back. It's good.
That's actually interesting, because in the forums they said multiple times, you can find 10 posts from learners about not supporting and not going to support
amazing.
And this dude is not dead.
Oh yeah, that was actually that got a round of applause in fairness.
Well, they're kind of stuck now. You have Winbox version 3 that you have to use with 520 or 620 and above. So where's that leave the dude?
Or users of the dude.
Yeah. Because you have Winbox built into the dude.
What if there'll be a hack? So kind of a little hack or a registry.
And then IPv6 in the dude. Like, you know, we do a lot of monitoring on our network, and that pretty much IPv6 and, a little polish here and there. I love the dude.
Just give me 64 bit counter support. That's all I need.
Yeah.
But imagine how many people are out there managing their networks with the dude, and all of a sudden they can't right-click in Winbox.
Is the Winbox a separate executable? You know, can you hack it? Like, is it just going to the job directory?
I think it is compiled into the thing.
Every time you connect to a new version, remember it pulled all those new DLLs and all that stuff? Mm-hmm. So it can't be like hard-coded a specific version. There has to be some kind of...
It depends how they do it, but there is a bunch of programs that can pull resources from compiled executables and exchange resources into compiled executables. So there might be a way.
I am excited that it's not dead. Like, because on the forum, it's kind of been, Normus is kind of... He's pretty much said what Jonas said today or yesterday, but not in certain terms of absolutely the thread that I've been following for probably 2 years. I never comment on it. I just watch it very closely to see what the progress is. And the dude is an important part of my network management.
It's incredibly easy to use compared to any of the other networks and NICists. Like, someone goes, why do you use NICists? I go, I'm lazy.
I use Cacti for graphing, which in my opinion is a substantial learning curve to get in there and make it work the way you want it.
Yeah, particularly with SMB version 3. It should be not simple.
I've been using NetXLS a lot
lately,
and that's my personal opinion on the build. I think Microtik has now missed a lot of opportunity with it.
Even if they charge $40 for a license, if you get 100 of those, would that pay a developer?
Or spin it off a different company and just give someone who's kind of employee to manager or something interested in it to do a whole...
They would get rough to open source it for a while, and I think Ormus or someone that represents Microtik at one point did say basically that the dude is a side project for them, something that they do in their spare time.
Yeah, there's a Latvian company that makes Zabbix, that monitoring system. Just contract it out. Say, here's the code, here's the source for the dude.
It's not just Zabbix. NetXLS is actually developed in Riga as well.
Is it really?
Wow.
And as I said, I do a lot of NetXLS later, and I actually talked to the developers of NetXLS because we needed some patches, etc., and they actually said they are considering doing Microtik. slope of some kind of a sound field.
That'd be awesome.
Well, if you're any kind of...
Yeah, it's the same city.
If you're any kind of company that wants to get your wireless out there in large deployments, you have to have something on the back end to manage.
Yeah, just be very...
Yeah, you have to have automation.
And Caps Manager, I see them integrating Caps Manager into the Dude.
Yeah.
So you'll be able to manage your access points, your Caps access points from the Dude, and that would be awesome.
That's a good segue, but let me say something before it falls out of my head. One thing I noticed that this month more than any other time is they didn't really say no to anything. They said, let us know about it, send us an email.
Yes.
So they didn't really say no. They basically said, it's a hierarchy of needs. The more people say they need it, the quicker it's gonna get done. Which I thought, that's brilliant. That's exactly what people wanna hear.
Yeah.
Is that we are,
absolutely,
we are listening to you, we're gonna respond. That's how you do it.
So email them everything you ever want them to do.
Everything you
want. Repeatedly.
Yeah, but actually find out it helps actually. You know, it's that's what I do. It's like, I'd email them once, and they go, no one ever has ever asked that. And 6 months later, I'm repeated. And then it gets traction.
So
four people have asked for this feature.
So what you're saying is say
four emails.
Start a snowball. But then Yanis did let me in a secret that he says, we do know that you're resending your emails. So they heard this last email. Can you do it?
It's really open this as well. It's hopefully that continues. I don't know if any of you saw, but like a couple of months ago, Norman's also posted in the forums that they are considering doing something about bug tracking as well, maybe an official bug tracking system.
Good.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully that continues and that should translate into that as well.
Well, going back to the transparency thing, they're now posting the change logs of the RCs.
Right.
And actually, they said as well on the forums, this was in 6.18, in the release thread for 6.18, that they are changing the way they actually structure their internal processes as well for the change logs to be, which has been a major problem.
Problem, absolutely.
Yeah, you'd see stuff just, because like you'd see RC changes that never even got mentioned in the official.
Even like, remember they only used to use RC1, and it was always RC1, but they had a date on. They know, like, kind of through the tons of the program a few times about that, but now at least they do RC6, so you know, in running or you know, 20 RC6 or whatever, you know, what version of the RC you're running.
So yeah,
it's a help, like, you know.
So hopefully that transparency, you know, the change log, having all the exact changes being there, you know, so if there was a bug tracker.
Yeah. Bug tracker, we save a lot of in support calls, costs for them. And a lot of support costs, like if you're on...
I would love to be able to go in there and be like, I'm having this problem, and then go to the bug tracker and see if it's something that I need to pursue with them directly, which would waste more of their time, or see if it's something that's already open and on their plate.
Yeah, if somebody puts in a bug and then you can just
vote on it.
Yeah, you see 100 votes pop up.
Linux,
in a couple hours.
Linux distributions do that. You Google, you know, a problem, and a lot of times it pops up, you know, in the bug tracker.
But yeah, definitely, I think you should seriously support this. So yeah, if you hit a bug, you have a suggestion, because this is kind of the first chink in their armor, where they're sort of like, they're trying to love again, right? They've been burning the path. So you gotta really nurture them, you know? Works out really well, I think they'll be open to just more of them.
Absolutely, because, you know, they do have a relatively tight development team that we never see. It's a brain in a jar, you know. But it's a positive thing, which hopefully we'll see more of it. Like, the B2B stuff I'm kind of excited about, because when you have a lot of B2B peers, you know, you start seeing the convergence thing
And routes get stale because it's not updating correctly.
He said that was the version 7 enhancement, correct? The convergence times were very, incredibly acceptable. Was it 3 minutes?
1.5 minutes, 1 table.
Going from 3 minutes, 3 minutes was current, and then up to 8 minutes then.
Yeah.
And now it's going to go 1.5, and then 2 for every additional table. 2 minutes.
It's beautiful.
And the memory usage was ridiculous.
Yeah, they must
36
do something.
That's ridiculous. Like I saw Old Beach PD, I think it's around 76 meg or over table. And it was 256 currently on Old Root West.
I think that's right. And then they got 60 peers up and only used like 500 meg or something like that.
Yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's well, insane. Hey, doing 60 peers on Outer OS. Yeah.
But somehow maybe I'll have 850G X2s, right, in internet extensions everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, if you start seeing that peer convergence, that means you can start using these things as route collectors. Or route servers. You start using them as route servers and kind of an internet exchange, maybe with a few more options and tweaks. A little bit more granular control.
Absolutely.
You could, well, and I think over here. You have asked, they're looking for to add more features into getting more information out of it.
Yeah, so like counters, so like one thing I was asking for was counters on your root filters. So like, root filters.
Right, like base of the tree.
Yeah, so like you can see if you know, so you can see if a root filter is actually working, yeah. Or it's a lot of hits. So you know, you kind of go, why aren't all my roots coming across? And then you just see this one thing, you know, just counting them quickly. You know, okay, I need to have a look at that. You know, just there was one thing I'd asked for a couple of weeks back, and it was basically, you know, if you're expecting to only announce three prefixes. The only way you have inbound, you have max prefix limit. Mm-hmm. So we're asking for like, well, if you're expected to announce only five prefixes to someone, you'd have a max prefix of maybe 10.
You know that, like,
so if your filters screw up, you can just put the session on yourself.
What I love is an SNMP OID, like that. Will you can pull it. It'll give you the peer. It'll give you how many routes came from him, how many routes you're sending to him. You know, your session establishment time, all this. You know, and then, you can just, in whatever monitoring package you have, you just set thresholds.
Yeah, because that's what a lot of the, you know, some of the other carriers to say, oh, don't worry about your, we set alarms to 75% of your prefix limit. So see, that we get a note.
Yeah, I want to know that. So if like my peer session falls and then I see it's only been up for a minute and then it falls, you know, I just look at my graph or I set a threshold. Yeah.
And monitoring is your most important tool.
Absolutely. Otherwise you're like driving a car with a light bulb on.
It was impressive the some of the examples that Yannis went through, like or kind of pointed out, you know, the 28 steps. Bridging VLAN and VPLS.
Was it the kindly shut up slide?
We were talking about this one last time.
It really was interesting. It was, this is exactly, I'm going to try to answer all the questions I know I'm going to get because I've been doing this long enough. So let's see if I can, let's see how many questions I can not get asked.
One slide.
Yeah.
But Yannis, he tries to be grumpy, but you just can't resist it. You can't, but like, Yannis, we love you, but yes, grumpy mofo.
No, seriously, he does that so people won't ask him questions. He just looks
and says, sure size.
I guess that's true. If he was friendly, he would just not get out of the room.
Yeah, that'd be a constant burden.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So JJ brought up Capsman.
I'll just do a quick demo of that. That's right up my alley. I see that as being something that could really put them in an interesting position with a little bit more enhancement, like Oldest said, perhaps Capsman 2.0. But it looks like since all of the caps do have an active connection back to the Caps Manager, that active control is an option,
could be an option
with some effort.
Serious intelligence built in. So where you have a central brain actually controlling all the limbs.
Yeah. So possibly they could do some features that others don't.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, well, I mean, the potential is tremendous. The fact that, you know, I mean, and again, somebody asked for this feature, that feature, he said, it's great. So this is an email.
And that's where the bug tracker would help. You go through all the feature requests and...
Or requests. I like that. And that just bugs the requests.
Yeah, like there... what usually Norman said on the forums about bug tracker is that their biggest issue with the bug tracker is that, you know, it would have a lot of false positives and it would scare people off. I think if you implement it right, it could actually be a great tool for feature requests.
Right, right.
Well, I mean, maybe, like Red Hat, anyone work for Solids, I'd agree with you that that's their fear, but I think it's a false fear.
Well, they have enough people in the community that police that.
Exactly. Well, a good example is Reddit. You go on Reddit and start looking through the MicroTik forums, and you'll get people come on and say, oh, I tried to do a full BGP feed with MicroTik, and it was the worst thing I ever experienced. And then you know, most of the time, here comes Andrew, and he says, well, basically, you did it wrong, and here's why. Here's how you should be doing it, and then you'll have better results.
That's what I mean. You don't have to police the whole bug issue software. It just helps a little bit.
Well, even if you moderated it, like if someone kind of puts through like a well thought out bug track, you know, where it becomes like a known issue, like you know, like a lighthouse saying don't run aground here, that'd be useful. Like, but I do like it's kind of like the forums, you know. Jesus, like
I think it's so toxic at times.
Well, I'm useless, and I usually lose my temper when I'm reading the forum. I'm desperate because there's no other information online, so I'm really scraping the bottom of the information pool. And you get these guys talking.
To me, the forums are the very last resource. So I think the wiki's improved tremendously. It still needs work. I mean, but you know, that's the nature of a wiki. It's never finished.
Yeah.
So it's just
moving documents.
Yeah, that's the way it works.
But the bug track, if I see Mike or Greg or Tom or Justin or any of you lads, writing on, you can kind of say, well, Jesus, I better pay attention to that, or there's stuff that I can add in. Have you tried this? Because I did one for Red Hat for Free Radius. I was finding that at the end of a month, when it was rolling the logs, it wouldn't restart the service. I don't know if you've ever come across that. So I was kind of going, look, I tried this, I changed the init script. And a couple of weeks later, someone came back and went, oh, I've had the same issue, and here's what I'm trying to do. And then you get the developer coming in. But it's good. It becomes like a known issue log, and people kind of go, I better watch that,
And to that end, Cisco, if you look at any of their iOS revisions, when they retired them, they will say, there's this giant major bug, this giant hole we have, this is exactly what it is, it's one recommended update. These are all the things that were broken.
Yeah.
So it's like, even the biggest, I think you have to admit that Cisco's probably had the biggest networking footprint. And they say, we totally screwed up on all these things, but we fix them, so go up to this version. So
yeah.
I don't think you can be afraid to say you did something wrong. Everybody knows you did something wrong. Just admit to it and move back.
Yeah, I had to write an embarrassing mail on Monday, so this is my confession for the week. Basically, I shut down, I was upgrading to 6.19. And I kind of shut down all my BGP peers, so I was doing it all nicely, and I upgraded, came back up nice, I started starting up all my BGP sessions on it. I'm running about 40 peers in that one. Brought it back up, I waited about 15 minutes, I could see all the prefixes that I had learned from each peer, and they all looked right, around 500,000 routes on my primary, and I was going, okay, this is grand, I'll just now go about shutting down the BGP peer sessions on secondary. But the route selection algorithm hadn't completed, so they weren't actually put into the route. So of course, my traffic levels dropped. I was like, ooh, that's cool.
Is this
someone's going to send me a mail about that?
Is this something I'm going to have to edit out of the video?
No, you can do it. Tom Smith made a mistake. That's definitely. But I was talking with the guy. So this was a great thing about Mom's Zoom, people interact and ask. And I just said, just wait. If you're upgrading. Well, one of the advantages, you can do it without losing a packet. It's just saying, after upgrading your first one, maybe wait an hour before.
Yeah.
Or your second, But it's amazing, I learned that from being on an Indian exchange in Ireland, and you just see how guys have been doing it for 10 years, how they manage their,
It's not necessarily a MicroTik thing, this is how we've done it for years.
It's just a process, it's great, interacting with people. Wireless FP, sorry for talking so much, but wireless FP, I didn't realize it meant fast path. FP. It stands for
F has to be S has to be FEC, and then I don't know what the P stands for.
Yeah, we just got one more thing to add to our decoder ring.
So,
you know, of all the letters and things, but it kicks ass on everywhere I've used it. Like, I'm not deployed AC with it yet, but I'm just kicking it on in mode. And Brian Barge's presentation, I did learn something that I had not been doing. I'm going into the hardware queues and shifting that over for the fast path to take let's go. That's something that I've not been doing. So it's just little subtle things like that to get that extra performance.
Yeah, the only thing I had against the FP package was if you roll back. So let's say you upgraded on some routers, it didn't work so well. You roll it back from, let's say, the FP. So if you had set it to automatic, then when you actually, if the configuration is incompatible, so you have to reinstall it and set the TDMA period size.
Gotcha.
That was the only thing that when you roll it back out of that because that is automatic, which is null, that was an invalid value on the previous one. But when I was rolling forward, definitely.
It was really nice to hear Aldous give the explanation of exactly what auto is doing. It's, I was thinking auto was just, it selects it at some, decision window, and then it just stays at that value. But from what I understood him to say, it actually maybe rechecks at some undetermined period. Do you know, Thomas, on that?
From what I understand, auto actually is just like DFS with no radar detect, so it actually, this might be wrong, but from what I understand, it just checks its startup.
Oh, no, the MV2 DMA period.
Oh, you're talking about that.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. No. I mean, I have a confession as well. Our network still runs 6.7 everywhere, so I haven't tested
Fastpath
yet at all. So
5.26.
No, it's, for us it was the new changes in 5.8 with the BDP package being improved, and our whole network needs VPL, SPP, POE, so I'm just not touching that for the extended versions. But yeah, actually, I would like to upgrade for wireless FP.
Well, that's where one of the things that I think Giannis was talking about was the partitions.
Yeah.
Trying to push, use the partitions, that's going to help.
I've never used the partitions.
Even with the partitions, you have to upgrade. You think that you have to upgrade 40 to 50 to 100 devices, right? And then rolling back partitions, they always manually,
which if there was a feature in the Duke to lump all these together, say roll all those back.
Because I can upgrade with one click in the Duke, right? Even 100 devices, mm-hmm. and roll that back. That's all of course. Mm-hmm.
But I didn't hear them say though about Duke that they're developing it now. Say it's not dead, we'll do that.
Yeah, and they said the priority was CCR improvements.
Honestly, like you mentioned, that thread, the forum thread, they've been saying that the dude is not dead for the last 4 years. So.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't impressed by them saying the dude's not dead. I mean, they've been saying that.
That's what I mean. I think they just missed the time frame that they actually could have made it a big thing. Now, when they fix it, and we know it's not going to be now because they only have one or two developers, they will have to completely remake it.
And perhaps the individual that put in the majority of the effort maybe isn't present anymore, so...
But there's been many conspiracy theories on the forums. they lost the source code, that's why they want to open it. Yeah, the guy that was coding it was just one guy, it was his project, he wanted to code it. There's many conspiracy theories on the forums.
Yeah, it's I like that conspiracy theory. I just want an enhancement in that arena. It's just it could be such a powerful tool for everybody using MicroTik.
They're not the only ones stirring it up. Everybody else.
I think if they updated the dude, it would be so monumental. It would be one of those things that they would announce in the first morning presentation at like a mom. Like at the European mom, people would cheer for that.
Like you said, because currently if you really want a good solid monitoring solution, you either have to use Nagios or Cacti or Zabbix or channels, and that's all difficult stuff, right? And you do have that advantage of being really simple, of being completely graphic, of being one-click app device, etc. And I don't want to sound like a sales pitch, but Live XMS has that now. It's working and it's currently being developed. And it's not that hard to set up, and once you have it set up, it actually works. So, I mean, I don't know, MicroPig obviously has their priorities as
well. Well, one of the success that I've been complete is you keep the dude free, fair enough, but have an enterprise version. You know, have an Oracle data warehouse driver where someone says, I want this archetype to a proper data warehouse system. You know, I have regulatory compliance or contractual applications, and my clients need to be able to see all this data. I was saying, you know, charge someone $3,000 for the ODBC driver for, you know, warehouse and all that data. Or maybe they didn't want to open up how their DBs, you know, the whole structure of their database, maybe that would give a fair bit of the game away.
Anything to do. That's just SQL Lite. You can go into the data file or just
pull. Well, that's on 4 and on 3.
On 3, I don't know.
It's a flat file or something.
Can I ask?
Big fat flat file.
Can I ask one quick question? Okay, it won't be just one quick question.
Yeah, fair enough.
No, but like one of the things is, which is the last Ruro board or Ruro S version that ran a version of the dude that was recently stable? You know, where you have, I have a problem where, you know, you have a client and an outpost.
I have 3.6 running on x86, 615. So, stable, I use it every day.
All right, it actually works on 6015.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now I had problems with 4, but I don't think it had anything to do with the version that I was running on. The problems that I had were database corruptions, I had gaps in data, and so I just rolled back to 3.6, and that's where I'm at now.
So 3.6, do 3.6 on any version of RootOS works okay?
Well, on an x86, that's the one. And I skip versions, like I'll watch and watch and watch, and then I'll go, you know, I'll just get kind of spunky on that and be like, okay, let's go. And then I'll roll it out on all of our core infrastructure and cross my fingers and adjust configs if there's been big changes and work through the, but most of the time there's no problems. I just hit the go button, and I've had far less problems with MicroTik upgrades than I have with Ubiquiti upgrades, to be honest.
Yeah. No, it's just that they retired the support for the dudes, you know, being on RootOS. You know, that was
like the dude package.
The dude package. So like the reason why is, let's say you can monitor people, but you know the way you need to monitor a client's view of a network that you can't root directly.
I'm gonna sound a lot like a fanboy about this thing, but what we do with NetXMS, since it's completely open source and it's written for Linux, they actually give you the source code and you can compile it for Raspberry Pi or anything else.
Right.
And you can actually run and then you can actually run an agent on a Raspberry Pi, you know, completely independent of something else and still on the central server.
Are they still using an RRD tool for graphics?
No. And they actually evolved a lot. They now have a unified interface across web, across Linux, Windows, and everything else. They even have an Android client.
Where are they making it money that you support?
I don't know. It's like they are giving everything away for free. They do a lot of free support on the forum. Of course, they must have
custom dev and
support contracts and SLAs and all this stuff. But that's what I mean. You know, with the dude, if you look at the available current monitoring solutions and how far they've come and how advanced they are, the dude was great 4 years ago as it was.
Right.
But today, if they just patch things, it's still.
So it served its purpose during the time that you think it's.
And perhaps maybe that's what's going on behind the scenes. They look at the landscape and say, it would take so much effort, so much time to bring it up to.
Fair enough.
And perhaps maybe if all these other companies are in Riga, maybe there's more conspiracies.
Well, it's vicious looking.
So did you guys have anything else that product-wise you thought was pretty interesting or noteworthy?
Well, I thought the dishes from the guys in Turkey were so interesting, they gave me the display.
Really?
Yeah, been sitting up in the room.
Seriously?
Yeah.
I want you to test them out because they...
It's It's the mile that's like the Jers with the with the, you know, shroud that goes around.
What room number was that?
Seven. Room number seven. And so it's like the Jers, and it has a radome, but the mount on the back is very much like the old school Cisco's, where they've got, it almost seems like two eye hooks with a turnbuckle in the middle. And you slowly turn that turnbuckle.
This is like 0.3 of a degree per turn.
0.3 of a degree,
I was really expecting to see somebody with a 3x3, even if it's slant polarization offering. But I guess everybody's putting them in their chambers and saying, this is absolute shit.
Yeah, that's. I think that's where
so, it boils down to.
You know, because even like when MISO, it's their 4x4 is 2x2.
And I really think circular polarization is an answer to that.
And you're talking about like a triple chain radio going into a single dish.
Yeah.
So have horizontal, vertical, and something else.
Yeah, some other hocus-pocus. I think. I mean, I think if a lot of the antenna manufacturers start looking into satellite comms, they'll find some solutions there, because in SATCOMs, you can't run linear polarization, because when you start looking up in the sky and you have something, let's say perhaps it's a LEO.
That's something we've reported for.
Oh, but yeah, when you're working with SATCOMs and LEOs and stuff, when you're tracking that, well, you know, when it gets down on the horizon, your linear polarization all of a sudden looks like an X instead of a cross. So you have to look at it through different means, with like left-hand circuit, right-hand circuit. So that would introduce a unique problem, but I think you could overcome it in the feed designs. We actually been playing with a feed design with left-hand circular and both vertical and horizontal, that basically we just bolt onto the back of a ubiquity dish. We have no intention on producing something like this in volume, but just to play with it and see if we could get it in a ballpark.
Only one person needs to make it, figure it out. Everyone else is going to copy it in a week.
I should just give away the, we're actually printing it on 3D printer and then lining it with copper tape and then putting long poles in it and then dielectric. So,
once you get it working, send it over an IPsec tunnel to somebody in China, and within 6 months, they'll be on our show.
That'd be some urgent.
Right? But,
the American team?
Our team. Team America.
America!
But it's a lot of fun, so this is something that we've been playing with, and we just took inspiration from C-band feeds, like this old school C-band feed. We just shrunk it, and I was like, you know, we could just create a... So we actually, Sam and I downloaded and installed an Inventor, I forget, but Inventor, we started with Inventor Fusion, and then, but then just went to Inventor and went and borrowed a book and started learning how to do... basically, 3D modeling is on, right?
As you do.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, when you're bored, you're on Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got a cup of coffee.
But, like, you know, when you're doing circuit polarization, like, is there a point in time where it would actually interfere with, like, the vertical and horizontal, like, you know? Like,
yeah, but I think you can do phasing, and that's the reason we're playing with a feed, and perhaps solve the same problems the manufacturers have, and go, oh, so that's well.
Yeah, why?
I just can't figure out why we're not seeing any of that. And I think, and the thing is you may introduce some self-interference. However, you're not looking for a tremendous amount of oscillation to get advantages of that third chain or fourth chain of beam. You're looking at like maybe 60 dB. You're not looking for 30 or, I mean, 30 would be fantastic.
But so is the idea you shoot horizontal and vertical at the same time and you stop it as that's moving, you shoot a circular? So it's like,
no, like you just basically blast away all at the same time, but when it arrives on the other side, your receiver is able to hear those four independent chains, or three independent chains.
Power.
Just
2 seconds. Well, do you guys remember?
I'd like to probably just slow
down. Yeah. Do you guys remember the
it's
old
team effort.
Hyperlink Technologies company? They sold all kinds of junk wireless goods. They had circular antennas like 4 or 5 years.
Uh-huh.
So I'm wondering why those
software. Oh, why didn't they catch on?
Yeah, why didn't they catch on?
I guess vertical and horizontal were solid and worked better, but now
this is almost like a necessity. You have to do something.
Yeah, you have to do something to get that separation to the especially with more massively multiple multiple out looking a little popular with AC. We're looking at I think this standard can go all the way up to eight chains.
And I think how that may play in more is you know we're looking trying to go three and maybe four using the same idea of that we're all going to the same place, but what the most is talking about doing in their you know eight chain stuff is you know you got 2x2 that's going to this person and a different 2x2 is going to a different person, so no one person is going to get more than you know whatever the peak is of a 2x2, but you're doing four of them at the same time.
In an indoor environment, these 8x8 chains, you know, like a room like this, we could get some of these ridiculous speeds.
Points to multi-points easy. You know, anything more than 2x2, it's easy to point to multi-point, but point to point is your problem.
Yeah, doing left-hand and right-hand circular in a sector antenna, I don't really know how you would go about doing that. You would have to put so much dielectric in there and have so many. Perhaps you could do it with waveguide, if you guys have ever pulled apart like one of the Ubiquiti Omnis. You know, they have for the horizontal chain that waveguide. So maybe they could put some dielectric in there and do some magic, but you're talking, you know, for 5G antenna that used to be this wide, all of a sudden, you know, it's probably going to be this tall.
In that environment, you just add a second antenna for your, you know, to make up your chain.
I didn't understand any of that.
One thing that annoys me about the AC standard is 160 megahertz channels per. It's just going to screw up every whiz out there. Like, give them 16 chains. We'll just keep it at 20 megahertz, 24.
And you'll see that's
they don't need it anyway.
They won't use it, like, because when you start running power at that distance, it won't scale. Like, I don't think it will. Not with
all those home users, though. It's like, you know, we have a 4 gigabit, you know, access point on our 50 meg Comcast, so you can still be using N in one chain and be fine. And it's solving problems that aren't there in the home market.
Some of the more expensive, like, you know, you manufacturers of plane tunes, like, you know, Alvarian and all that, they use circular polarization for some of their kit as well, like they were saying.
That's why I wonder, because, you know, circular polarization has been around for a while. So was it?
I think
so
it fell out of favor because of cost. Like, you know, everybody kind of came on the scene, like Ubiquiti, you know, launched their antenna line. Mm-hmm. And that kind of changed the landscape for everybody, because all of a sudden the antennas were, instead of being $1,000 a shot, I can get the same thing, or roughly the same thing, for $100 or
whatever. So circular is a lot more finicky? Like, you have to really be locked in really tight?
Not exactly. From my experience with it on satellites, and just playing with it in amateur radio, moving off, I mean, basically, you're taking a divide or a thing, the dielectric, and sticking it in the feed, and then when you send the RF into that monopole and it arrives to that feed, you're slowing down the wave, so you're changing the phase of it, and that's how you get your circular polarization. So
it's like blowing air on to something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Think of blowing smoke on to something. Now you're changing how that moves.
Sound or light, or a computer shine light through something that's slightly opaque. You only get a certain amount of light out, so it would arrive. You'd have to have perhaps a little more energy for it to arrive at the same power levels. I don't know. I think it's cool.
I remember doing an experiment in college. They used to circular polarized light, and then a lens, and they get these perfect like shapes. And then you flex them, and you'd actually see the stress lines appear. It was unreal. Like,
it's all the same theory, whether it's visible light, like, or RF, like, the so funny whenever an RF guy kind of, I come from an RF background mostly, and so when I come into this stuff, it's like, oh, you know, I know all this, and I have to learn it, and I mean, and, you know, I'll figure it out, but then, you know, recently in the last year or so, started looking more at fiber and how it works. Oh, it's the same stuff, it's just moved way on up in the spectrum of frequencies. Yeah.
That guy from Asian that you were saying that you got, you looky jammy bastard. Well, then again, I couldn't hear any more either.
I have one.
Oh, you have one. You don't have the second one?
No, do you? No. So I have to wait for someone in the US to stop the other one.
All right, okay.
You do the ice bucket challenge again.
Well, I had a Cisco dish. I used the switch and, you know, I had the same little turnbuckle.
Your man had a great presentation just talking about how all the OFDM and the sub-carriers, he did it in Dubai, he does as well. He used to freak me out, he used to pronounce phase fast. That's the only thing I would say.
I did enjoy his presentation. I mean, it was pretty much spot on with all of his theory from all of the presentation that I caught. And if you want to know how EC works and on a more fundamental level, I think his presentation is solid.
Yeah,
I enjoyed it.
So speaking of presentations, Tom went right after the announcements.
Yeah.
And it was that was yesterday. I think. Yeah, yesterday.
Mike was drinking.
Yeah, interesting. So you did PGP protection, right?
Yeah.
And denial of service mitigation. You went 100 miles an hour, covered a lot of stuff, but good content.
Bigger routers, things.
Bigger routers.
But that was good. Because you covered so much, obviously you didn't go too in-depth on any one thing, but that's great. Because, you know, pick up something you've never heard of, and then, oh, you're going to use something. That was phenomenal.
Well, I think a lot of people now are, you know, they know what BGP is. They know, you know, a lot of this stuff. Okay, I've got it running. What do I do now?
Yeah.
How do I help myself?
And then I would think, you know, could someone that's not yet using BGP still use those same principles in the black holes because it's creating a black hole route?
Yeah.
It's just they're not amortizing up or they're getting routes back from other people. It's just using the same principles to make a route that goes nowhere.
I think beyond that, just security stuff is interesting.
It's been made interesting. I think about security is just like whatever.
Yeah.
But you know, when Tom talks about it, it's interesting.
Sure. It's layers. Like the first time I started thinking about security and layers, I think Greg said it, and it's like you might not be hyper secure on day one, but you just put another layer of complexity in there that adds some more security, and then you put some of Tom's special sauce on top of that, and perhaps by the time you're done, you're more. Your vector is smaller, you want to say.
Yeah, well, I think the main thing I suppose the main thing for people is that if you are being DDoS, just contact your propulsion provider. They're the guys who can help you, and if they can't help you, it's the guys that help them.
Well, I mean, it's from having been like that middle service provider, I absolutely want to help you to stop DDoSing me as well.
Yeah.
So, it's my best interest.
Because it was funny, like we had met CCIE, and we had a problem with a customer in the Middle East, and they were being hit, but one of the providers doesn't do black holes, they didn't care. And my friend just goes, well, that's easy, just turn off the peer advertisement to the guy who does do black holes, and let the other guy take the full hit of the black hole service. So maybe that'll convince us.
Yeah.
Justin, wherever. I just thought it was kind of a cool way.
So kind of the segue again, I'm hungry and I want to get it wrapped up.
Yeah,
it's hungry. So what was everyone's favorite thing at the Mom this year, including everyone in the room? We'll start with Justin here.
I'd say my favorite thing was the transparency. You know, it makes you excited about, okay, you know, there's a roadmap, they are working on this and that and things like that. The overall feeling, I guess, of, you know, transparency. You know, I didn't really have, you know, favorite top leader, but the overall mood of it from MicroTik was huge to me.
For me, I guess it's, and I might take some heat for this, but currently for the CRSs, I don't really see a use for them simply because it doesn't have all the features yet. But the need is the fact that they're constantly releasing new CRSs and that they are pursuing the market and putting research and development into it. I'm really, really hopeful for the future for the CRSs because obviously currently we deploy MicroTik everywhere for the routers and the wireless, but for the switches we have something else because you know it's just not there yet. So I'm just hoping that you know just they will put some more research and some more work into it and maybe that people will become also
better. For sure. A couple of things. One is I've absolutely enjoyed seeing all you idiots. Again, meeting some new guys. Surprised that I knew, but I didn't know that I knew. But I think my favorite thing here, I nodded what Justin said, the transparency, it really gives you kind of a sort of
warm
feeling.
Fuzzy feeling.
It gives you kind of a feeling of ownership, yeah. Right? Because we like use this stuff so much that it, we become dependent on it, and this gives us this control, you know, nobody will control. But I think one of the things I really liked was Thomas's presentation, which we didn't talk about, but use DSCP to affect routing inside your network, and it's just one of those. It's one of those IKEA
moments. Once you see the concept, it's like, why have I never even considered it?
You know, you go into IKEA and you open this drawer and then it has like this magical little slot thing that pops out. You're like, I never knew I needed that. That's brilliant. Yeah. And it's like, it's just so clever. Yeah. And so that was like his presentation. It was just something really well done.
Thank you.
Really well done.
Thank
I was
you.
Super impressed.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
My favorite part, actually, it was kind of. You know, after the last podcast, I said a few things that I think a lot of people responded to. In a gracious manner, after I said I lost the turf down my ear. I think the guys were pretty cool about like they were saying x86-64. And now, in fairness, I did bang that drum fairly hard in the presentation as well, but I'm looking forward to x86-64. No pressure, guys.
So, since Tom brought it up, I wasn't going to say anything, but you brought it up about that. And in my presentation, I even said that we're very passionate people about what we do. And sometimes that passion comes out, you know, unfiltered. And so, exactly. So, not only is this what we do for a living, but we truly love it.
Yeah,
and we truly pour ourselves into it. So. I think you can expect that passion from us, and I think you would want it because we've become great fans.
Absolutely.
You know?
As much as we complain about anything in MicroTik.
It's only out of love. It's like, I'll never forget as long as I live, Tom explaining MicroTik to me like a girlfriend.
Really annoying. You might yell at her, and then you realize, oh, she's so amazing and so
beautiful. That'll just stick with me for life.
Root for improvement. Well, it's all good. It's good. Like it's like 95% of the time, it's amazing and makes you consider a warm, fuzzy feeling. And that 5% is just so fucking infuriating. Sorry, but it just hits your buttons, you know? And I get theirs right now.
Alright, well.
But, getting, you know, just their whole new attitude, that, you know, how they presented themselves was a lot different, you know. Blood transparency, probably my favorite part, but then the Tom's presentation. That's always not just the presentation of the content, but the content as well.
Yeah. Seeing all you guys, everyone that I've met as a part of the Brothers Wisps, and one of the moms and the Wisp shows, and just everybody that I get to meet and go see, like, I truly consider Justin and Greg and Tom and Mike, I mean, and I'll get to know other people, but family. I mean, we talk almost every single day. If you go through our group, Scott.
Probably should. No, not a good idea.
Well, you shouldn't go through it, but I'm just saying. We literally, Andrew Cox, Andrew Drift, and the rest of us.
They can make it.
Yeah.
And
but
Justin,
it's a family.
Justin, like 2 hours away, didn't show up.
Seriously.
I even offered to go pick him up. So, on the way up.
He would have let him whip around. We would have.
He's probably mad right now because he wants to go, but he
yeah,
he's like,
could we call
apparently, his boss wanted him, boss, you suck!
I'm probably going to edit that one.
I'm sorry. we don't want to get fired.
Truly is a family, and I'm lucky to be a part of it. But one of my favorite things from the actual MUM, new product-wise or announcement-wise, transparency, definitely. I don't know, I've been to, this is my fourth or fifth MUM, I can't remember now, but four or five of these I've been to, they've all been U.S. MUMs. And just the reception of the, I don't want to say criticism, but the openness to accept that there's chinking in the armor and none of us are perfect, and the products that they produce are amazing. And with adjustment, they'll only be perfect. I mean, because all of us, I think, want to be able to take these products back home and put them into production in any network. Like any opportunity that comes our way, we want to say, here's my Swiss Army knife, I know how to use it. Let me throw out these blades and I'm going to use it here because it works and it's going to work awesome. And I don't want to have to go, but don't touch that. I want that, don't touch that. I want it to go, that'll work fine. Yeah. So that's kind of the biggest thing that I think we have. I was also excited to see, the AC stuff, I think it's a step that we have to take to get to the new frontier.
Their products are solid.
Yeah, the net metals are
amazing. I mean, it's the same, but they're really...
Yeah, the AC stuff, the net metal. I also talked to Arnis about the idea of perhaps maybe exposing a DC jack on the net metal for us that want to run fiber down the tower. And at first, it was kind of, well, why would you need such a thing? And then I explained it in detail. And I think just the openness and the responsiveness is just incredible.
It obviously really resonated with all of us. Do you think everybody else was as perceptive and picked up on it? Maybe not the first time, obviously.
Right.
Not the first
time. People that don't complain as much.
Yeah, I mean, we're very critical, so we notice those things.
It's not critical, but opinionated. We notice and pay attention to follow. Yeah. So, I don't know. Maybe just watching the MUM presentations, you won't pick up on that. But a lot of people watching out this, but yeah, there's definitely. I don't know. I wonder. Do you guys?
It's my first MUM, so.
Yeah, you did.
But honestly, I felt like they were very, open and talked about their issues and concerns. And I mean, one of the things I loved is they're actually, they're still developing new things, but they're listening. All the CapsMan questions and concerns and new products. And like I said, I think they're really trying to fit the market the way we want it to be. So,
what was your favorite thing that you saw that?
Knowing what products are coming, where they're going, and the deep dive into the CapsMan. So I think that's going to be a big product for Microtech.
Cool.
What are
you going to do? Well, the best thing I've had all week was meeting you guys, partying with you guys, really, and basically having the opportunity to go out and talk to other people and see what they're doing, what is working and what is not working.
Right. And sharing your ideas. It's huge in this thing. Like, we were talking way about freaking access control and stuff. You never know the conversation.
Passing the MTCNA first try. Not everything.
That's
good. I came here with a lot of questions today and this week. Actually, I've been here since Sunday and got all of them, I think, answered. If you go back and play with those. CapsMan was an interesting concept. I can see deploying that in many ways. AC products are going to be some of the future, so it's always good to see it coming. Be prepared for it when it gets there.
Cool. And what are you guys doing?
I too was here for the MTCNA, and it was a dream class actually. This is my first month, and it was an absolute blast. Trying to absorb all the information from everyone here is. My brain's about to explode. I mean, it's an unbelievable amount of information, good information, fine, everybody's doing. Hanging out with you guys and partying with you guys was a blast. And also, you know, as far as the mom itself, I liked Tom's cameraman's presentation. His presentation was good. We're you know, my company is doing some things, and the security was great. We got the AC stuff was good, but the mom as a whole was just a blast.
Oh yeah, the first one I went to in 2010 or 2009, I don't remember what year, but first one I went to, I was watching these presentations, and I was like, what the hell are these guys talking about? and you know, you fast forward now, and it's like, oh yeah, that's a really good idea. I'm gonna go and try that. You know, I mean, so it's just the progression of it. You know, you come in green behind the ears and don't know what's going on. I've never even heard the word BGMP in 2009, and I recently got my own ASN and announcing my own subnets this year, so it doesn't take long.
That's cool. All right, man. So appreciate all you guys in here, except for Drew, because he didn't say that meeting us was one of the highlights.
I did say I was buying the first round. I thought that was going to work.
I didn't get to party last night. Wait, reel it back. Mind back. So anyway, I guess we probably went on long enough, and we recorded all this on cell phones.
Two different cell phones.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's going to be a little piece together, probably.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, but man, overall, a good experience, just like always, for sure.
Send us ideas.
Yeah, look forward to talking to everybody again soon.